I think there's a little bit more to you that I'd like to investigate before we do finish. We've followed with interest yourself growing up, and we went through the issues of contracting polio and how you've dealt with it. And we've certainly, by no means fully explored, but had a pretty good look at music career. But I got a feeling there's a bit more to you that I'd like to look at. First of all, if you put aside Ross.
Hi, I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm the producer of Australian Rock of Ages, and it's a pleasure to bring you another program in this series of 24 monthly programs that will feature the life and time stories of some of the people whose talent, skills and dedication have contributed to the development of Australian music, particularly through the 1960s and 1970s. In this program, we feature the story of Ross D. Wylie.
The artist, there's still Ross the person who lives in a community with people around him. So there must be other things that affect you and that you have an opinion on. And I just wondered if we could have a look at some of the things, like, for instance, you've got children, grandchildren?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Five.
Half your luck. Are there things that are happening around you that give you great concern for their future?
No, not really. I do, but there is sweet FA you can do about any of it. We have too many people. We don't have enough infrastructure for the too many people we have, but we keep producing and inviting people, and I don't know whether that's the answer. The kids somehow, though, will come out of this so-called gloom and doom that a lot of government and people push, especially the climate change issue. But when you look around and you read a paper and you see that in Peru they've discovered a disposable cup that the Peruvians, or whatever they were called, made 3,500 years ago as a throwaway item, you start to wonder about this global melting down and heating up and so forth. I mean, we've been around a hell of a long time, this country. I am glad, to a certain extent, might sound weird, to be leaving on the next train in another 15, 20 years, because I do think there is some major crap going to happen, but I don't think we're all going to die. I don't think that. Yeah, sure, there's been some evidence of fires and floods and earthquakes. Has there really? Or is it just our imagination that these things are happening more and more than they did in the old days? I don't know. But to answer your question, no, because these kids are resilient. They have got, mine all have. They've got good brains, excellent marks at school. I've got one who is in Houston at the minute. On a skill, I mean, her mum and dad are lucky enough to be able to afford to pay for them, because it's not cheap. But she's over there in Houston because she's part of her science mind is at 16, quite brilliant. And
wow.
She's ducks of the class of this and that. And we're not just getting A's, we're getting straight A's, Granddad. Oh, good. You know. So I don't worry about them at all.
Just pause on that for a moment, because given your background, for all sorts of reasons, you didn't have a lot of formal schooling. Does it give you great pleasure to see?
Oh, absolutely. And they obviously don't get it from me, but they get it from their grandma and their mother and their father. And you know how things skip? Most of the time, things skip a generation. And I got two grandchildren that could end up, and that I would love to be around to see on stage.
They say, though, Ross, that the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree, and I think somehow you might be selling yourself a little bit short, because classical learning in a school is one thing, but there's also the wisdom and philosophy that comes from life. And you can't say you haven't experienced life.
No, I've certainly experienced life, and that if you walk around without your head in the sand, that'll give you an education, no doubt. But if you want to go, I was about to shoot myself in the foot then. If you want to go to the head of the class, you need some reasonable grounding.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I thought television at times, I'm now going to have to read people's names. I'm going to have to introduce people that I can't pronounce, etc., etc. So maybe that's going to be a drawback. But at the same time, you find a way to work around that. If you know, like I've had people at times come to me and say, "Is that how you pronounce?" Yeah, that's how you pronounce so and so. But then I've got to go to people and say, "How do you pronounce that?" Because I have been guilty of introducing, as they compare as MC at a wedding, one of the favourite lines for the MC is, "Ladies and gentlemen, let me be the second person today to introduce Mr. and Mrs. Smith." And it's not Smith, it's Smythe, or something similar, you know.
Okay.
Then you want to drop through the floor.
But that can happen to anybody in any situation.
Yeah.
One also feels, though, that you have the now have the skill and the background to be able to deal with those things without really getting it through, letting it throw you.
Yes, that is experience.
Mm.
But, which is one of my gripes about the youngsters of today and the television producers and the creative side of Dancing with the Stars and First Date and Bachelor and My Friend's Got Talent and etc. The scenario that I see is that we take this kid that's got a voice and we put him or her into a rehearsal with a song that has been recorded by Melbourne's finest musos, produced. Now we've got a lighting plot with the camera, and now we've had two people warm this audience up to the point of hysteria. "Okay, babe, your big moment, you go out and sing." And they go out and sing because they can sing. You've got to be able to sing, as you said before.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But around them is all of this beautiful production and an audience that will eat you if they could. And the pats on the back and the, "Oh, Frankie, you are going to be so big." And these judges of fruitcakes, they just paint this picture, and the kid walks away with a bit of luck and fit the head through the backstage door. And then 2 days, 3 days go by, and all of a sudden the adrenaline and the emails have stopped.
Yeah.
And the high, you're coming down. And the untrained are going to go, "Is that all there is?
Very traumatic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, but you are not getting any grounding in the music industry life.
No.
Over and above the learning how to be a GLBT, XYZ, knowing what to say. You don't know. You've got no chance. And you've got a manager already who is telling you how to do this and how to do that. You've just given away your whole self to a record company because it's really good to say, "I've got a record contract." But if you look between the lines, you now owe the record company hundreds of dollars.
Oh yeah, that's right.
You know, that of the industry I absolutely detest and hate. It's horrible because the kids aren't getting an education. They're not getting a grounding. Go and stand on stage with a 3-4-piece band at the Corner Hotel and entertain. Show us your music there, not in that studio.
But, Ross, is that an indicative of the strength of the music of the 60s and 70s in particular, that there were so many live venues and the artists really... And, in fact, at one stage it was often said that Australian music was... Its strength was the fact that you learnt your chops in the pubs and the clubs.
Mm.
And you could often put overseas bands to shame because if something went wrong, they didn't know how to handle it.
Absolutely.
But in Australia, you learnt how to handle everything.
Yeah.
Those opportunities aren't there really now, are they?
No. But that's because the music's crap, right, for a start. Not all of it.
I can't disagree. Not all of it, but most
some
of it.
Most of it is.
Most of it. It is.
And because they're searching for something new, something different. And by God, that's hard.
It is hard. It has to be an evolution, not a revolution. Yeah. You can't make it.
I mean, the Presley will last forever. The Beatles will last forever.
Yes.
So will Mantovani and Tchaikovsky.
Yep, yep.
That will last forever. You tell me that people I see on the TV are going to be around in 20 years' time or singing their songs. Some of my grandchildren are even listening to 70s, 80s music, like Billy Joel.
Yes.
They're not listening to their music.
I don't think that's an isolated example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I find that heartening.
Yes.
Because I find that to be a really good move, a good push for the generations that's coming through.
Yes.
But they're not taking on board all of this weird stuff, you know.
Like, well, we can only hope that that continues to evolve like that, because I suspect we see things very similar in this way, that music really is the soul of a nation.
Mm.
You know, and our soul's not in a very good state at the moment.
What you have to do is keep your eyes open. And my wife can't handle it when I go out somewhere to a dinner or a lunch or a bistro or whatever. There's the inevitable poor bastard sitting in the corner on a stool with a guitar and a mini disc, and they're just playing music that's in the background. Now, I can tell you that half of those people have got better talent than that, but that's making a little quid that keeps them going.
Yep.
But all they need, it's like those children I was talking about before. A kid, I've seen so many, been with so many, what is the correct PC term now, physically challenged children that can't talk properly and, you know, rather than, you know, their little soul is in here and it's working its bum off trying to explain that I really am not like this. I don't want to be like this. I'm more than like, g'day, give us a cuddle, you know? It's that sort of...
Yes.
And you don't disregard them. They'll come to me. I'm being over-dramatic, but to a certain extent they'll come to me if you open up.
Yes.
Because they are a little bit mushed in the brain department, but they still want to love, and they still want to cuddle, and they want to dance. And especially some of them want to laugh, and when they laugh, they sound like a shift has just gone down, you know, the channel or something or other. But that's the little people, I love them.
They are our future, aren't they?
Well, yes, they are. And I'm so annoyed with the way we've gone with this PC brigade, because I would hate to be a young man these days trying to get on with life and understand what is the right thing to do in front of a woman these days. Well, how do you address it? At 75, I'm still going, g'day, love. How are you? You know, I'm sorry. I should have said, hello, madam. How are you? No love there. I'm not their love, they're not my love. But that's us. That's us, old relay, you know. I hate walking on eggshells all the time.
Many, many years ago, when I first started this program, and I was a lot younger than I am now, I interviewed quite a few older people who would, somewhere in their interview, say something like, you know, my life is coming to an end and I don't mind because this is not my world anymore.
Mm.
And I didn't understand it then, but do you know I understand it now?
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're saying in some ways.
Yeah.
It's not our world anymore.
Mm.
Things change. Things have to change.
Yes, they do. And I think as we get older, we learn, we're becoming more aware of the change that is inevitable.
Yes.
You know? I mean, even understanding, like my father, finally, as I said, committed suicide when I was 19. I hated him for years, 20, 30 years. I've hated him until I couldn't stand it anymore. And I went to my doctor. I said, this is driving me crazy. And he said, write him a letter. I said, what? He said, write him a letter. Just sit down and write him a letter. Well, I didn't actually write the letter, but I took on the mental
process
of writing him a letter and saying, I at least now, after pre-war, understand what you went through, even as a Home Guard type civilian. I understand the alcohol problem. So, yeah, I sort of forgive you. So I was a bit more free, if you like, that I didn't have that burden on my shoulders.
So you forgave him, but you also forgave yourself, didn't you?
Oh, to a certain extent I have, yes. Yeah, I gave up hating him for what he did to himself and did to me and my siblings, my brothers and sister. I understand now totally why he did it.
Do you think you also understand a little bit more about yourself too, having gone through that process?
In terms of...
Well, you must have come to have consciously dealt with some of those issues. And I was just wondering whether it meant that you were actually able to analyse yourself a little bit more and understand why you were feeling those ways.
The hate for him. Mm-hmm. The hate for him didn't extend to anything else. It was purely targeted straight at him because I found him. I was there. Yeah, I mean, don't say I need to go to a psych or I don't need that horrible word closure, but I did need something to say, okay, now I understand what you did and everything is forgiven, then let's move on. Music, probably in my earlier days, helped save me there, helped not think about it too much, just keep, going up, just keep filled your head, if you like.
Very healing thing in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's what the doc said, that you will find that it'll work. And I'm, of course, being a so-called tough Aussie male, I don't need that rubbish, But you do, and you do need to talk things out, And I talked to my mum a lot before she died about him and what he used to do to her. And the thing that amazed me more, and I think I'm repeating myself, is that she had unconditional love for him, even though he treated her like a pig.
Very powerful thing, unconditional love.
Ah, mate.
It? Very powerful.
And when I have glimpsed memories of her when I was still in hospital watching from my veranda in the hospital, and here's my mum with my two brothers and sister, my little nipper brother was a baby in arms. And I said, she's there. How did she get there? She's taken a bus. Well, those three, how amazing is that?
Yeah, quite amazing.
Quite amazing. She's definitely been my inspiration.
That sounds like a great place to finish. Ross, thank you very much for sharing some of your life with us.
Mate,
it's been fascinating.
You wind me up, I just keep going.
Thank you again.
All right, pal.
I thought we might finish the interview with a track recorded by Ross in 1970 called My Little Girl.
I wish there was a way to tell the whole world just exactly how I feel. Wish I could find the words to tell you all the little things that make her love so real. If my little girl is smiling, the world stands still. If my little girl is smiling, there's a sun in her eyes like a million golden daffodils. If there ever was a boy who so badly needed someone to love, it's me. Not a plaything or a toy, just a pair of loving arms so full of love for me. Lord, I've waited near a lifetime, now she's here and I want all the world to know. that found her with her smiling, loving eyes that let me know she's my baby. If my little girl is smiling, the world stands still. If my little girl is smiling, there's a sun in her eyes like a million golden daffodils. Beg your pardon if I seem 1,000 miles away in dreams, but so would you. If you had a little girl that could smile away your tears and tell you true, not a worry in the world, there's not a problem that could really be so bad. And when my little girl is smiling, I wanna thank God for the lucky love I have. Yes, she's my baby. If my little girl is smiling, the world stands still. If my little girl is smiling, there's a sun in her eyes like a million golden daffodils. Yes, that's my baby. That's my.
This program is a Handsome Dog production and is podcast through the Toorak Times and TAG.